Coon Review, Print Speaking to the Blind, celebrating 40 years of audio newspaper production. Welcome to this week's edition of the Herald Scotland podcast, recorded at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre by our amazing volunteers. You can get in touch with us via Facebook, Twitter or Instagram using @CoonReview, that is @CoonReview. You can also contact us directly by emailing information@coonreview.com. That is information@coonreview.com. Or by calling 0141 772 3976. That's 0141 772 3976.
The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 13th of December 2023. From the news section. Ayr Town Centre fire. 8 appliances called to blaze. An article written by Jody Harrison and read by me, Corey. Firefighters were called out to reports of a major blaze in the centre of Ayr. Crews were called to Ayr High Street on Tuesday night after receiving calls from members of the public. 8 appliances were sent to the scene. There has been no reported injuries so far. Road closures have been put in place with traffic diverted away from Ayr High Street. A Scottish Fire and Rescue Service spokesperson said, "We were alerted at 8:25pm on Tuesday, December 12th, to reports of a building on fire at High Street, Ayr. Operations Control mobilised 6 fire appliances and 2 height vehicles to a fire affecting a commercial property. One fire appliance is currently still at the scene and firefighters are dampening down hotspots. There are no reported casualties at this time." The blaze comes less than 3 months after a major fire caused significant damage to the former station hotel building, a short distance away. 3 teenagers were arrested in connection with the station hotel blaze, which happened on September 25th. That article is from the Herald Scotland. It was written by Jody Harrison, and it was read by me, Corey. The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 13th of December 2023. From the news section. Mark Drakeford quits as Welsh First Minister. An article written by Tom Gordon and read by me, Corey. Labour's Mark Drakeford has resigned as First Minister of Wales with immediate effect. The 67-year-old, who has been in the post for exactly 5 years, had already signalled he would step down before the next Senedd election in 2026. There will now be a contest to replace him as leader of Welsh Labour and First Minister. In a resignation statement he posted to Twitter/X, the Cardiff West MS said, "When I stood for election as leader of Welsh Labour, I said I would stand down during the current Senedd term. That time has now come. It has been a great privilege to serve as leader of this party. Together we have achieved a huge amount over the last 5 years, in some of the toughest times we have known. Despite all the chaos in Westminster, the ongoing impact of Brexit, climate change and the pandemic, by working together we have delivered record results for Welsh Labour in the local government and Senedd elections. The greatest task is still ahead of us, to return a Labour UK government and start repairing the huge damage which has been inflicted by the Tories over the last 13 years. I will work tirelessly to secure that Labour victory and to continue delivering on promises we made to people across Wales in 2021, to deliver a stronger, fairer and greener Wales." He said he was confident the process to find his successor as Welsh Labour leader would be concluded by the end of spring term, in March. He added, That would enable the name of the winner of that contest to be put to the Sen'id before the Easter recess. At Prime Minister's Questions, Rishi Sunak wished Mr. Drakeford well. Sir Keir Starmer described him as a titan of Labour and Welsh politics. The leader of the Welsh Conservatives, Andrew R.T. Davies, said, "I wish Mark well as he stands down from the helm. While we may have different visions for Wales, I know I'm joined by colleagues in holding a huge amount of respect for his dedication to the job of First Minister. It's important, however, with this announcement that there is no distraction from the really important job of delivering for the people of Wales. Labour politicians jockeying for the role of First Minister must not detract from this." A former probation officer and justice worker, Mr. Drakeford was elected to the Sen'id in 2011 and became First Minister in December of 2018 after Carwyn Jones left the job. Although he had a mild-mannered style, he was a passionate champion of devolution, frequently warning of Westminster's overreach. Among those tipped to replace him are Economy Minister Vaughan Gething and Education Minister Jeremy Miles. Mr. Drakeford's wife, Claire, died suddenly in January. The couple had been married since 1977 and had three children. That article was from the Herald Scotland. It was from the news section. It was written by Tom Gordon and it was read by me, Corey. The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 13th of December 2023. From the news section. This is an exclusive article. Website hack reveals dozens of neo-Nazis in Scotland. This exclusive article was written by Gabriel McKay and it's being read by me, Corey. A hack on a neo-Nazi website has revealed customers from across Scotland purchasing music, clothing and propaganda. The Swedish website Midgard specialises in Nazi music, clothing and paraphernalia, and originated as a record label in the early 1990s. It's described on its website as having been set up to help people and organisations that fight for the white cause, and to deliver products to nationalists all over the world. Its online store features designs incorporating the white power band Screwdriver and their Rock Against Communism campaign. T-shirts with the phrase "Refugees Go Home" and a brand called Fasci Nation featuring fascist imagery. Its customer database was hacked by AFA Sweden, an Antifa group based in Stockholm, revealing more than 20,000 orders from Europe and beyond. The register contains the names, addresses, phone numbers and purchase information of all Midgard customers over a 5-year period. The Herald can reveal that a total of 36 individuals in Scotland made purchases from the store between 2017 and 2022. Many customers made repeat purchases, including a man from Edinburgh who placed 20 orders between 2018 and 2021. Among his orders were albums by Screwdriver and No Remorse. The latter's back catalogue includes tracks such as Bell Sin Was a Gas, and this song title includes a very offensive word, the N-word. It will be described as the N-word when I say the title. The N-words came over. One customer from Lanarkshire displays a demonic figure wearing a Celtic cross in social media posts, and the email he used to place his order contains the numbers 1488. The Celtic cross is a well-known neo-Nazi symbol, while 1488 or 1488 refers to the 14 worlds. We must secure the existence of our people and A Future for White Children. And Hail Hitler, H being the eighth letter of the alphabet. Charleston church shooter Dylan Roof repeatedly used the numbers in his manifesto, and symbolically carried 88 bullets to the church where he murdered 9 African American people. The Christchurch mosque shooter also made reference to 1488 in his manifesto. Another customer who made multiple orders, including a neo-Nazi compilation album, lives in a £250,000 home in a small village. Medgard had 6 separate customers from Glasgow between 2017 and 2022, as well as 3 from Falkirk, 2 from Inverary, 2 from Lark Hall, 2 from Gart Cosh, and 1 from each of Aberdeen, Kilwinning, Perth, Tain, Grangemouth, Strathaven, Cumbernauld, Whitecraig, Dundee, Loch Inver, Arbroath, Bishop Briggs, Edinburgh, Stranraer, Broughty Ferry, Alloa, Livingston, Paisley, Hamilton, Steinhouse Muir, and Port Glasgow. Patrick Hermanson of the anti-racist, anti-fascist campaign group Hope Not Hate told the Herald, "The shop sells white supremacist, Nazi music alongside stickers and posters and different memorabilia." It's the last part which has gotten really popular in the last couple of years for far-right people in the UK. Links to Midgard are shared quite regularly across Telegram by fascist and Nazi groups. Members will buy stickers with different far-right slogans and themes, and put them up around where they live as a form of activism. When you look at the younger audience and the British audience, they're interested in the sticker and posters and that kind of thing. It's not just for private consumption, it's content for activism. The shop has increasingly moved from Nazi music scene into a provider of material for far-right activists in the UK and other countries. The people behind it are quite well known. They have connections to the Nordic Resistance Movement, one of the largest and most extreme organised Nazi groups in Europe, with members who have committed acts of terrorism. They themselves have a criminal record for hate crime charges. The shop sells Hitler's Mein Kampf. It's full of Nazi content. Its front page is covered in it. There's no way to be on this shop without knowing what they stand for. That article was from the Herald Scotland. It was an exclusive article written by Gabriel McKay, and it was read by me, Corey.
From the Herald Scotland, Wednesday the 13th of December, from the sports section, Zoe Clark on the rocky road back from a career-threatening injury, by Susan Egglestaff. Battling injury comes with the territory for every elite athlete, but even knowing that, Zoe Clark still didn't expect to face the challenges she's been confronted with throughout 2023. Prior to this year, things had been going almost flawlessly for Clark. She had established herself as one of Britain's very best 400-metre runners, making her major championship debut in 2017 in impressive fashion by helping GB's 4x400m relay team to silver at the World Championships. Following that international debut, Clark added 6 more major championship medals, her most recent being Scotland's relay bronze medal at last summer's Commonwealth Games. Such success is, then, quite a contrast to the position she found herself in this year. Having been in the shape of her life in recent years, Clark suddenly found herself not only unable to run, but, in fact, unable to even stand up. After much investigation, the cause of the problem was finally discovered, but the timescale for recovery, if a full recovery was even possible, was not good for the Aberdeenshire native. After opening my winter season with a 60-metre indoors, in January, a couple of hours later I basically could not stand up straight, Clark says. I had ongoing back issues and did not really understand them. We got an MRI scan which confirmed I had basically slipped a disc and compressed the sciatic nerve. I was given a realistic timescale of 1 to 2 years and was hit with the bombshell that I might never regain full nerve functionality. It's not what you want to hear as an athlete. There was no quick fix, so it was a real setback. It then followed that Clark, despite being able to avoid undergoing surgery, was forced to watch the entire season from the sidelines as her compatriots and relay teammates were winning yet another piece of major championship silverware in the shape of a bronze at the World Championships in August. Clark was battling through endless hours of rehab. It has not, admits the 29-year-old, been an easy spell. I underwent a lot of physio and exercise, says Clark, who was speaking ahead of the release of her new Scottish Athletics short documentary, entitled Zoe Clark, Fighting Back. I'm trying to get back to my best self. I've been at a certain level and I need to remember to be kind to myself. I might not be able to do everything I could before, or maybe I can, but not just as fast as before. It's tough. It has not been smooth. My family, my coach and my training group have all been really good. I think I have not been the easiest person to deal with and given the frustrations over the injury. If you forget to enjoy yourself, then basically you are lost. In the early days of her injury, Clark was faced with the terrifying prospect of her career being over for good. However, she refused to allow retirement to be forced upon her as she always has. She says unfinished business with the 400 metres. And 2024 could not provide a bigger goal for Clark to work towards. The Paris Olympic Games are less than 8 months away, but while Clark is reluctant to make too many grand predictions about the prospect of her forcing her way into the reckoning for selection for what would be her second Olympic Games, she's quietly hopeful she could be on the plane to Paris next summer. I'm hesitant to put performances on my radar, but of course I would absolutely love to get myself to Paris for the Olympics next year, she says. The Olympics are on the horizon. I am taking winter training on a day-by-day basis. I'm getting there and it is improving. If I recover as I hope, I feel I have unfinished business with the individual 400 metres. I'd love to improve my PB and make the Olympic team as an individual. Watch Zoe Clark Fighting Back in full via www.scottishathletics.org.uk or www.youtube.com/scottishathletics. And that article was by Susan Egglestaff.
This is from the Herald Scotland on Thursday the 14th of December 2023 from the news section. Citizens Advice Scotland. People living with rats and mould. This article is written by Ginny Sanderson. Vulnerable Scots are having to live in properties infested with rats and mould in very worrying numbers, Citizens Advice Scotland has said. The charity released a report today, December the 14th, which revealed some landlords are failing in their basic duties to repair serious problems like vermin, damp, and homes left without heating and hot water. Among the issues reported included a mother in a housing development overrun by rats, who was afraid to let her children play, and a father in an uninhabitable home with a leaking roof and asbestos. A Citizens Advice Scotland spokesperson said, "This research shines a light on the state of housing repairs and maintenance in Scotland, and much of it is not a pretty sight. We already know that rented sector tenants are often financially vulnerable. To find that they are also having problems getting basic repairs done is a real concern, and even worse is that some of them fear losing their home if they request the repair. When you rent a property, you sign a tenancy, which includes the rights and responsibilities of the tenants, but also the obligation on landlords to make sure the property meets a repairing standard. This is a legal requirement, not an option they can choose to neglect." The Citizens Advice Scotland report, called In a Fix, is mostly based on cases from the private and social rented sector, but also includes cases of owner-occupiers. Among the distressed tenants who wished to be anonymous due to fear of being evicted was a woman in the east of Scotland who has been trying to resolve a severe damp, mould and water ingress issue in her flat for 9 months. The mother, who has autoimmune issues and whose mental health has been badly affected, said she was told by council that she would be considered guilty of abandonment if she left and would lose her place in the housing list. She fears for her health and the health of her children. While a woman with multiple health issues in the east of Scotland moved back into her property following a flood and found mould growing on the walls, appliance issues, and a mice infestation, Citizens Advice said she was also wrongly told by her council that she could not access the Scottish Welfare Fund as she already had accessed it once. And a father in the east of Scotland cannot have his children to stay with him due to the uninhabitable conditions of his property, which has mould caused by a leaking roof, as well as asbestos and vermin. Another tenant in the north of Scotland said the housing development site she lives on is overrun with rats to the extent that she cannot let her children out to play. The report shows Citizens Advice has had to issue advice on repairs on 5,600 occasions over a two-year period from 2021 to 2023. This accounted for 10% of all housing advice given by Scottish CABs in that time. One third of the people who needed CAB's advice on repairs also needed advice on other matters, most often on financial issues like benefits, debt, energy and broadband bills, and charitable support like food banks. In some cases, the poor state of repair caused the tenants to experience physical and mental health problems or made existing conditions worse. And some private tenants did not want to report their repair for fear of eviction, or had already been threatened with this for raising it. Ms. Deary said, "It's important to say that most landlords in Scotland do meet their commitments well. It's in the nature of our service that we only see the cases where things have gone wrong. But the numbers of cases we're seeing is very worrying. The good landlords are being let down by the bad ones, who are bringing the whole sector into disrepute. Our research exposes a level of failure in the system that is unacceptable. It is simply not right that some of the people who have approached us for advice have had to live in, frankly, substandard accommodation. Everyone should have the right to live in a safe home of good standard. If your landlord is failing to carry out repairs, you can get free, confidential advice from your local CAB." In its report, Citizens Advice Scotland made a number of recommendations. Among them, it suggested that the Scottish Government should develop harsher penalties with councils for landlords who attempt to evict tenants for reporting a repair. The report also advised expanding funding for councils to enable them to deal with repairs and developing insurance options for private landlords. Reacting to the report, Chief Executive of the Scottish Association of Landlords, John Blackwood, said, "As the CAB report acknowledges, the overwhelming majority of private landlords in Scotland live up to their obligations to provide safe, high-quality property and to conduct repairs, maintenance and upgrades in a timely and professional manner. Scotland, quite rightly, has some of the highest standards for rented property in the UK, and that is welcome. The issues of poor maintenance are not restricted to the private rented sector and occur in council-owned housing, social houses and housing association properties. Across all sectors, plus the private rented sector, we must see better enforcement of the law by local authorities, along with incentives to invest in new and existing rented accommodation, to drive up standards and force rogue landlords out of the sector for good. That article was written by Ginny Sanderson. This is from the Herald Scotland on Thursday the 14th of December 2023, from the news section. Ex-BP boss Bernard Looney to forfeit £32.4 million after serious misconduct. This article is written by Christy Dorsey. Oil giant BP says it has dismissed former chief Bernard Looney for failing to disclose past relationships with colleagues, meaning he will lose out on £32.4 million in pay, share awards and cash bonuses. Following a three-month review after Mr. Looney resigned in September, admitting he had not been fully transparent with the board of directors, Mr. Looney has been formally fired. This means Mr. Looney's 12-month notice period ended today, with immediate effect. Following careful consideration, the board has concluded that, in providing inaccurate and incomplete assurances in July 2022, Mr. Looney knowingly misled the board, BP said in a statement. The board has determined that this amounts to serious misconduct, and as such, Mr. Looney has been dismissed without notice, effective on the 13th of December 2023. Mr. Looney will receive no further salary, pension allowance, or other benefits, and he will not be paid any annual bonus in respect of the financial year 2023. He will also be required to repay half of the cash portion of his annual bonus for the 2022 financial year, totalling £420,000, and a portion of his share towards that vested in August 2023 from a performance incentive plan covering the years from 2020 to 2022. The board received a first set of allegations about Mr. Looney's conduct in May 2022, after which he acknowledged a small number of historical relationships with colleagues prior to becoming chief executive in 2020. He also assured the board in writing that there was nothing further to disclose. The most recent allegations were made in September by a female BP whistleblower, who identified further past relationships that were not previously disclosed. At that time, the board launched an investigation into the allegations with the support of external counsel, and said it would take a decision about Mr. Looney's remuneration at a later date. BP said 87% of the £32.4 million had been automatically forfeited when Mr. Looney resigned, but 10% was related to the board's decision that his misconduct was serious enough to justify firing him. A further 3% is being clawed back at the board's discretion. That article was written by Christy Dorsey. This is from the Herald Scotland on Thursday the 14th of December 2023, from the news section. MSPs warned not to do a Matheson while on holiday at Christmas. This article is written by Tom Gordon. MSPs have been warned not to make the same mistake as SNP Health Secretary Michael Matheson, and run up a huge data bill on holiday this Christmas. Holyrood's IT department has issued a stern notice to politicians and staff, telling them to ensure that they have the appropriate roaming bundle in place for their phone or iPad SIM card. Failure to tell IT in advance about the mobile number involved, destination, and holiday dates will result in expensive out-of-tariff charges or loss of connection, officials said. Mr. Matheson faced calls to resign last month after it emerged he had run up an £11,000 bill on his parliamentary iPad while on holiday in Morocco in the new year. He later revealed his teenage sons had racked up the charge watching football matches by using the device as a hotspot. Mr. Matheson's failure to have an outdated SIM card replaced, despite messages from the IT department, had contributed to the extraordinary cost. He is currently being investigated by the cross-party body which oversees the parliamentary estate for claiming £3,000 towards the bill on his MSP expenses. Holyrood's IT department today issued an email to MSPs and staff titled "For Action," capital letters, "Travelling abroad this Christmas?" It went on, "Planning to travel abroad this Christmas? If you are travelling abroad this Christmas and intending to use your phone while not connected to Wi-Fi, you must let the IT help desk know, so that an appropriate roaming bundle can be applied. Please note that this includes European destinations, which are no longer covered under domestic tariffs. Please let us know at least 2 working days before you travel and include the following information in your request: mobile number, destination, date of leaving and date of return. Failure to do so will result in expensive out-of-tariff charges or loss of connection. If you are on a cruise or do not have a bundle applied, please switch off your phone or put it on airplane mode and connect to Wi-Fi." Although the email did not mention Mr. Matheson by name, the connection was obvious to parliamentary workers. A Scottish Conservative source said, "This is a not-so-subtle reminder from the parliamentary authorities. We can only hope that the IT department had the sense to ask for a read receipt when they sent it to the scandal-ridden SNP Health Secretary, who blithely ignored their previous memos about overseas data use. With an old firm game looming on the 30th of December, they've made it clear that they don't want another Matheson-esque bill." The Scottish Parliamentary Corporate Body, SPCB, is due to give its verdict on whether Mr. Matheson's £3,000 claim was appropriate next month. First Minister Humza Yousaf has said Mr. Matheson made an honest mistake and did not break the ministerial code. However, if the SPCB ruled Mr. Matheson wrongly claimed public money on the basis his bill was for constituency work, the Health Secretary's position could be made untenable. This article was written by Tom Gordon. This is from the Herald Scotland on Thursday, the 14th of December, 2023, from the news section. SNP's flagship care reforms hit by 3-year delay. This article is written by Tom Gordon. The Scottish Government's flagship shake-up of the country's care services has been delayed by 3 years, as the potential costs have doubled to more than £2 billion. The changes to the National Care Service, NCS, were revealed by SNP Social Care Minister Marie Todd in a letter to Holyrood's Finance Committee. However, in the face of intense criticism, Scottish ministers are proposing to backtrack on so many key parts of the plan, the cost could be cut to below £1 billion over the first decade. The first vote on the National Care Service Bill at Holyrood has been repeatedly delayed because of money and design issues. When Nicola Sturgeon launched the NCS plan in 2021, she said it was arguably the most significant public service reform since the creation of the National Health Service in 1948. The aim was to end the postcode lottery in community health and social care, by ensuring consistent and high standards and embedding the principles of fair work for care workers. The go-live date was due to be 2025-26, within the current Parliament. However, that has now been pushed back to 2028-29, well into the Parliament that runs from 2026-2031, when the SNP might not be in power and the NCS could be abandoned. The original NCS plan involved transferring council-run care services and assets to the NCS, with existing joint NHS and council integration authorities replaced by local care boards. As care and social work makes up about a third of council budgets, local authorities and unions push back hard against the prospect of large-scale transfers. But the government is now proposing to let councils retain responsibility for all their current functions and the delivery of social work and social care services, meaning there will be no transfer of staff or assets. In addition, the plan to create new care boards has been ditched in favour of reforming the existing integration authorities. Instead, there will be a National Care Service Board monitoring the sector and giving advice. The NCS was forecast to cost between £644 million and £1.26 billion, depending on the extent of care service ministers ultimately chose to transfer. This is now put at £880 million to £2.2 billion, although the time frame has been spread over a decade. If MSPs agree to amend the bill to incorporate the proposed changes, the cost over the first 10 years is put at between £631 million and £916 million. The changes follow months of engagement between Ms. Todd and the care sector to co-design the reforms in light of growing criticism. They also come as the Scottish Government tries to save hundreds of millions of pounds ahead of next week's budget for 2024-25. In her letter to the Finance Committee, which previously criticised the vague costings for the framework bill, Ms. Todd said the most significant change was the go-live delay. Due to a clearer understanding of the requirements in the setup of the NCS at national level, obtained through the co-design workshops and engagement with people with lived experience, the NHS and council body, COSLA, the NCS programme has reprioritised and rephased various work streams to reflect the new understanding, her letter said. She said that while the delivery mechanisms for the NCS may now be different, the vision behind it remained the same, including a consistently high level of care across Scotland. That article was written by Tom Gordon.
This article is from the Herald on Thursday, the 14th of December, 2023. It is from the Voices section and the headline is Satanic Scottish MP, This Petty Society Can Go to the Devil. And the author is Neil Mackay. I've a confession. I'm unfit for society. I'm a medieval German serial killer, you see. Alternatively, my social exclusion should be predicated on the fact that I'm also a feral 11-year-old Irish girl currently embarked on a murder spree. Either way, cancel me for your own safety. I should certainly, if I was insane enough to dream of such a notion, that is, be barred from running as an MP, for that's effectively what's happened to a chap you probably hadn't heard of until this week, unless you live in Fife Council's Glenrothes West and Kinglassie ward. For, in 2023, a councillor called Altony Craik has been forced to abandon his ambitions of running as a Labour MP due to party concerns about novels he's written. Apparently, his father's steelbooks involving occult goings-on are just too sexy and satanic. Wow! Sexy and satanic, you say? Let me spin up Amazon right now. I thank Scottish Labour's prissy little Mary Whitehouses for the heads up. I would never have heard of these depraved works without their ministrations. And isn't Altony Craik a fabulous name for a horror writer? Talk about nominative determinism. So, in sympathy and solidarity with Mr. Craik, I hold my hands up as a fellow author of what our moral watchdogs must evidently deem harmful material. One of my novels explored the real-life crimes of the German serial murderer Peter Stumpf, who local villagers thought was a werewolf. Clearly, I must support psychopathic violence and lycanthropy. Surely I couldn't have been exploring criminal psychology or how societies react when terrorised. Another of my novels is about two preteen killers during Ulster's Troubles. Obviously, this was my veiled confession. Rather than doing bunny hops on my BMX, I spent the 1980s embarked on a killing spree. It's obviously absurd to think that Northern Irish writers might try to make sense of the violence in their society or the impact that had on children. Such nonsense. I'm blatantly a carrier of unclean thoughts and need purged from this New Jerusalem in which we now live. Unquestionably, Mr. Craik's novels expose his own festering tendencies. He's obviously a Satanist, just as I'm a murderer in both the 1540s and the 1980s. Mr. Craik couldn't, could he, have been writing to perhaps entertain readers, or even, heaven forbid, maybe explore religion? I tip my hat to Alistair Clark of The Courier for breaking this story of political absurdity. Mr. Clark wrote that Mr. Craik is expected to issue a statement saying he's withdrawing from the contest for family reasons, not for literary reasons or crimes involving the imagination, not for culture sins or artistic offences, but good old family reasons. For pity's sake, if you're going to hound writers, at least be creative in your bullying. Mr. Clark explained that Mr. Craik was directed to stand down because of party reservations about his novels. Labour apparatchiks seemingly believed he's not a suitable candidate because his books are too sexy and satanic. Aside from how balefully juvenile this all is, what strikes hard is how Labour seems intent on purging the party of anyone who dares possess a personality or hinterland. Obviously, charisma and vim are matters deemed unseemly in a party ruled by a geography teacher. Apologies to geography teachers. Any I know are interesting, lively folk, but you've had a bad rep when it comes to the crack. So you'll have to do as a metaphor for the aching dullness of Sir Keir Starmer, a man whose voice is oral tramadol. Labour's strategy for power is obviously to flatten the party into an entity so perfectly dull and void of spark that it becomes some milk gruel, some tasteless pabulum. A vacuum made fit for government through hard-won nothingness. But let's shunt Labour aside, mercifully, and look at the wider issue here. We've now moved, it seems, from cancelling the books of dead writers to cancelling living writers for their books. What fearful pipsqueaks, what a pinch-faced society we've become. Art and the artist aren't the same thing, no matter how much Twitter's screaming tribunes try to make it so. Agatha Christie didn't assassinate victims on trains. Shakespeare wasn't a Scottish king. In fact, the reverse is often true. Keeping to our satanic theme, William Peter Blatty, who wrote The Exorcist, was a devout Catholic. Novels are works of imagination. They are, in essence, the outpourings of the adult mind at play, offered up as entertainment for other adult minds. If this scares anyone, then don't read. Stagnate. A library must seem like Bluebeard's Castle to these people. Look, I get the odd tweak here and there. Yes, take the racism out of Roald Dahl so kids of all backgrounds can still enjoy his works. That's fine. Better a slight and understandable bowdlerisation than banishment down the memory hole. And, as someone who's taught English literature, I fully support expanding the curriculum to include more, many more, writers of colour, women writers and LGBT writers. Though I would say that back when I was an undergraduate, 30 years ago, we were still reading plenty of writers of colour, women writers and LGBT writers. That fact seems forgotten amid the culture war. Nor should we let stupid events like Mr. Craik being stood down as an MP create false narratives around modern cancellation. Not so long ago, some newspapers, the usual suspects, were getting their lily-white knickers in a twist over Stirling University cancelling Jane Austen. The only problem was Austen, who I really don't rate, hadn't been cancelled. She was still studied by undergraduates. She'd just been swapped from a special authors module, which doesn't feature any writer permanently, and temporarily replaced by Toni Morrison. It was a great, if false, opportunity, though, to hype up nonsense about the old wokey-cokey. And you can see the subtext, right, given that Morrison is African-American. What Mr. Craik symbolises, however, is a culture of pettiness, of curtain-twitching and neighbour-snitching, a culture of fearful, deadening conformity. In truth, this is where our culture wars from both the left and the right have taken us, toward a society that is scared of its own imagination. To invoke Father Steele, to me such a society can go to the devil. That report was by Neil Mackay. This article is from the Herald on Thursday, the 14th of December, 2023. It is from the Voices section, and the headline is The Herald Diary, PM Goes Quackers, by Lorne Jackson. PM Goes Quackers. The good ship Tory party continues its glorious voyage with Admiral Rishi Sunak imperiously navigating the crew towards the blissful islands of hope and prosperity. Or is it the barren skerry of abject failure that he's heading towards at a startling rate of knots? Diary reader Joe McMillan thinks he has the answer and tells us, Sunak couldn't be more of a lame duck prime minister if his name was Donald, his best friend was called Mickey, and he was hopping around with a stookie and crutch. What a crock. A diary mention of a much-missed Glasgow shop reminds Gordon Fisher from Stewarton of a posh young chap he was friendly with in the 1980s, who bagged a Saturday job in Burton's menswear. On his first morning on duty, he spied a fellow who was searching the racks of T-shirts with a look that suggested he hadn't made up his mind about the apparel on offer. The posh Burton sales chap approached the potential customer and said, "Excuse me, can I avail you of any assistance this morning?" "Aye, I'm looking for a couple of taps," came the reply. "Oh, I'm afraid you're in the wrong shop," said the sales chap. "It's Croquettes the Ironmongers you're wanting." Dictionary Corner. Our linguistically lithe readers are examining the curiosities of the English language. Ken McLean from Bridge of Allen says, "I like the word ambiguous, though it surprises me that it only has one meaning." Affable Appliance. A lonely diary reader who works from home recently admitted that her office Christmas party is just her making small talk in the kitchen with the microwave oven. "I know the feeling," says Robert Mingus. "Many years ago, I attended a Christmas service conducted by an air fryer." Tuneful Tinkling. We published a photograph of an unusual Christmas gift, a toilet mat with keyboard keys that play genuine musical notes. David Donaldson suggests that while visiting the porcelain throne, a gifted pianist could give a stirring rendition of Handel's Water Music. Cold Comfort. Folk nowadays don't know how lucky they are with the heating, says Bob Whitesmith from Bishopbriggs. In the 1940s, when it was cold, our family would huddle round a candle, and if it was really cold, we'd light it. Sofa So Good. A tragic tale from West Kilbride's Peter Wright, who manfully suppresses a sob of anguish to tell us, "My brother fell into an upholstery machine at work the other day." On a more optimistic note, Peter adds, "He's now fully recovered." That article was by Lorne Jackson.
This is from the Herald Scotland on Friday, the 15th of December, 2023. From the news section.
high earners facing new tax hike in Holyrood's toughest budget. Report by Tom Gordon, political editor. A potential new income tax ban on high earners will raise nowhere near enough to dent a £1.5 billion black hole in the Scottish Government's finances, economists have warned. In a new report today, the respected Fraser of Allender Institute says significant spending cuts will also be required in Humza Yousaf's first budget next week. It said inflation and policy choices such as generous public sector pay deals, a council tax freeze and £100 million to cut NHS waiting lists had contributed to a £1.5 billion shortfall for 2024-25. Of this, some £800 million was in day-to-day resource spending, while £700 million was in capital expenditure needed for building projects and infrastructure maintenance. Without extra funding from Westminster, the picture was extremely challenging. The Scottish Government yesterday refused to deny a report in The Times that Mr Yousaf's cabinet had agreed to introduce a sixth income tax band aimed at high earners. The First Minister previously expressed interest in a proposal from the STAC to create a 44 pence band on earnings between £75,000 and £125,000 and £140 additional rate threshold. Research commissioned by the trade union group suggested this could raise £200 million a year. However, the Fraser of Allender Institute estimated the true figure would be £41 million once behavioural responses, such as people declining extra work to avoid paying it, were factored in. It said 135,000 people would have to pay such a tax, around 100,000 of them earning up to £125,140, and the 35,000 who earned more. Deputy Director João Sousa said, a new 44 pence rate above £75,000 will raise around £40 million, not insignificant of course, but nowhere near sufficient to balance the books. The idea of creating a new band was also criticised by former SNP Finance Secretary Kate Forbes, opposition parties and business leaders. Anyone earning less than £27,800 in Scotland currently pays a few pounds less in income tax than their counterparts south of the border. However, anyone earning above £27,800 pays more, with someone earning £50,000 in Scotland paying around £1,500 more than in England and Wales. If a sixth band is added on the STUC model, someone earning £100,000 in Scotland would be some £3,600 worse off than in England. Deputy First Minister and Finance Secretary Shona Robison, who will deliver the budget on Tuesday, refused to deny there would be a new band when asked by the media at Holyrood. The Fraser of Allender Institute said the budget was expected to be one of the toughest of devolution. Ms Robison first said in May the spending gap would be around £1.5 billion. The Institute said this later shrank to around £600 million thanks to improved tax data and spending cuts and deferrals, but other commitments had pushed it back up to £1.5 billion. These included public sector pay deals, which Ms Robison said were £800 million more than expected, and a council tax freeze, estimated to cost more than £300 million. The economists also said the Scottish Government's attempt to save money now by deferring spending to future years was only storing up trouble, and such savings were more than likely to be permanent unless substantial extra money could be found. Institute Director Professor Mary Spowage said, this large funding gap will mean difficult choices for the Scottish Government on what to prioritise. The Deputy FM may choose to use powers over income tax to raise more revenue to plug this gap, but it is unlikely that this would be sufficient in isolation. Significant spending cuts are also likely to be required. The Deputy FM has the unenviable task of choosing where the axe will fall. Tory MSP Liz Smith said, this eye-watering report only highlights the S&P's astonishing mismanagement of Scotland's finances. All the signs are pointing towards Humza Yousaf trying to tax his way out of an ever-growing financial black hole. That would be naive in the extreme, as the Fraser of Allender point out. A new higher tax band would barely make a dent in that deficit. Coupled with savage cuts to frontline services that are already buckling on the S&P's watch, this would represent a devastating blow to the prospects of growth in Scotland's economy. Speaking to ITV Border, Ms Forbes cautioned against a complicated sixth tax band on high earners, while England and Wales has a simpler and less expensive three-band system. She said, "I personally don't think that it delivers additional revenue. It's very difficult to protect against behavioural change when it comes to increasing income tax. We already have significantly increased tax rates and bans here in Scotland, and therefore I think we have to be very careful about not ultimately reducing public revenue with what we do with our rates and bans." In a public letter, business leaders urged the SNP Green government to avoid measures in the budget that may make Scotland less competitive, particularly in relation to any decisions on income tax rates and thresholds. The signatories, who included Scottish Financial Enterprise, the Scottish Chambers of Commerce and the Institute of Directors, said they were concerned about further divergence with the rest of the UK. They warned it could damage business confidence, remove money from the real economy, disincentivise investment in Scotland, and inhibit our ability to create jobs and attract and retain the talent our economy and society needs. A Scottish Government spokesperson said, "The Deputy First Minister has been very clear Scotland is facing one of the most challenging budget settlements since devolution as a result of sustained high inflation and a UK Government autumn statement that failed to deliver the investment needed in Scotland's public services. The Scottish Budget will be outlining the tough choices that have been required to target funding at our three key missions: equality, community and opportunity." That report was by Tom Gordon.
From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 18th of December, from the news section, Hugs and Mugs, Queen's Park Cafe closed after fire breaks out. Report by Jodie Harrison. A popular cafe on the edge of a park in Glasgow has been forced to close after it was damaged by a fire, which broke out late at night. Three fire crews were called to extinguish the blaze inside the Hugs and Mugs Cafe on the edge of Queen's Park on Pollokshaws Road in Glasgow's south side. A section of the building, which was unoccupied at the time, was damaged during the incident, with the flames appearing to have broken through the corner of the roof above the kitchen. Cafe staff posted on Facebook that with a heavy heart the establishment would have to close until further notice. Firefighters were able to douse the flames and secure the area after being called out just before midnight. No one was injured during the incident. The cafe, which was formerly a toilet bought before being converted, opened in February last year. It is popular with partygoers, with seating inside and outside in a large paved area. The cafe's social media post said, "Good morning everyone. It's with a heavy heart we write this post this morning. We unfortunately have had a fire in the cafe last night. Therefore, we will be closed until further notice from today. Apologies for any inconvenience and we will update you all as we get any more information. Take care everyone, we hope to see you all again soon." A Scottish Fire and Rescue Service spokesperson said, "We were alerted at 11:36 p.m. on Sunday, December the 17th, to reports of a building fire on Pollokshaws Road, Glasgow. Operations Control mobilised three fire appliances to the scene, where firefighters extinguished a fire within a commercial premise. There were no casualties, and crews left the scene after ensuring the area was safe." A Police Scotland spokesperson said, "We were made aware of a fire at Pollokshaws Road in Glasgow shortly after 12 a.m. on Monday the 18th of December. The fire was extinguished by the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service and no one was injured. Inquiries are ongoing." And that article was by Jodie Harrison. From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 18th of December, from the news section, exclusive. Jeanette Findlay to appeal University of Glasgow ruling. Article by Caroline Wilson. A Glasgow academic had been told she can appeal an employment tribunal decision which concluded that she was not a victim of discrimination after she was passed over for promotion. Professor Jeanette Findlay, who is president of UCU Scotland, lost her sex discrimination fight against the University of Glasgow, but the institution was urged to review its procedures for helping staff progress in their careers. She claimed her application to be made a professor of economics was rejected by the university on account of her gender. However, an employment judge agreed with the university that the 63-year-old's application was turned down in 2020 because she did not meet the promotion criteria and was unconnected to her sex. Professor Findlay is now pursuing an appeal of that decision, which was made in January, and attended a preliminary hearing last week where a judge ruled that there was merit in her case. The matter has now been referred to a full hearing in the new year. The judge's decision to approve an appeal is said to have centred on a number of issues, including the evidence of Professor John Finch, former head of the Adam Smith Business School. Professor Finch, who was in charge of overseeing promotions, told the hearing he had not supported Ms. Findlay effectively and agreed she had been treated unfairly. He said mentoring was important, specifically in the case of female academics, because of underrepresentation. Ms. Findlay accused the departmental leader of exaggerating the achievements of a male comparator, who did achieve promotion at that time, and he admitted that he may have failed to recognise some of her own. While the full panel rejected her claim of sex discrimination at an employment tribunal held last August, the university was advised by them to review its mentoring, career development and academic promotion policies. The tribunal was told that as of January 2020, there had never been a woman promoted to a chair in economics at Glasgow University in the entire history of the university from its foundation in 1451. Professor Antoine Muscatelli said during the hearing that it was shameful so few women were promoted to senior roles and the university had set a target to achieve a 50-50 gender split. The university did not comment on Professor Findlay's appeal, and that report was an exclusive by Caroline Wilson. From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 18th of December, from the news section, Scotland weather, high wind warning issued for Thursday, by reporter Jodie Harrison. Forecasters have said there may be a danger to life from flying debris when high winds hit Scotland this week. The Met Office has issued a yellow weather alert for the whole of the country on Thursday, with gusts of up to 80 miles per hour predicted to batter many areas. The warning, which lasts for 24 hours from midnight on the 21st, has been put in place across an area from John O'Groats to Manchester. Winds are likely to reach between 50 and 60 miles per hour inland, with stronger gusts of around 70 to 80 miles per hour predicted on the coasts. The Met Office says this could lead to travel disruption on roads and rail, while ferry services are also likely to be affected. Forecasts are also warning of danger on the coast, with the winds likely to generate large waves. The warning states, there is a small chance of longer journey times or cancellations as road, rail, air and ferry services are affected. There is a slight chance of some damage to buildings, such as tiles blown from roofs. There is a slight chance that power cuts may occur, with the potential to affect other services, such as mobile phone coverage. There is a small chance that injuries and danger to life could occur from large waves and beach material being thrown onto sea fronts, coastal roads and properties. There is a small chance of injuries and danger to life from flying debris. There is a small chance that some roads and bridges could close. And that report was by Jodie Harrison.
This is from the Herald Scotland on Monday the 18th of December 2023. From Voices section. Letters. SNP should stop the pipe dreams and focus on helping the poor. One particular sentence in the Danish author Bjørn Lomborg's book False Alarm caught my attention. Our extraordinary focus on climate means we have less time, money and attention to spend on other problems. How true? But how much more true in Scotland, where the fantasy of secession sucks the last bit of oxygen out of every conversation about every challenge that we face, whether it be local government funding, education, or the health service, to name but three. Despite the somewhat predictable slurs that he is a right-wing climate change denier, Lomborg neither denies the reality of climate change nor our role in that change. Instead, he regards it as a serious issue, one we shouldn't ignore, and for which we should be prepared to innovate and adapt. What he does do is unrelentingly puncture the rhetorical hysteria that obscures what should be our priorities. But it's the book's subtitle that seems particularly relevant to Scotland just now. How climate change panic costs us trillions, hurts the poor, and fails to fix the planet. Referring to the biggest ever study of heat and cold deaths published in The Lancet, Lomborg notes that whilst heat caused 0.5% of deaths, cold was responsible for 7% of all deaths. In the same year, 2015, the ONS estimated that the UK experienced 33 cold deaths for every heat death. Since then, the numbers of cold deaths have continued to rise, with this paper reporting earlier this year that the number of cold deaths in Scotland had doubled to a record high of 2,424 people in the winter 2022-23. Cold home deaths in Scotland double during cost of living crisis, The Herald, September the 6th. Last week we learned, as if we didn't already know, that 400,000 Scots live in cold houses. Health Alert is over 400,000 Scots living in cold, damp homes. The Herald, December the 14th. Cold housing accounts for something like 20% of excess winter deaths. So the more cold homes there are, the more cold deaths there are. Another grim harvest beckons. Yet, these almost certain deaths are not inevitable. These deaths are the result of poor policy decisions and misplaced priorities. They are the consequence of 16 years of dereliction, division and deflection. Whilst SNP politicians prance about the world stage, pontificating about subjects beyond their competence, and pronouncing that the end of the world is nigh, poor people back home in Scotland freeze to death in cold homes. So a climate change summit is the last thing that the First Minister needs to convene. What he needs to do is stop wasting time and money on his vanity projects and utopian pipe dreams and concentrate on making poor people richer. Rich people don't die of cold. Tragically, it won't happen because cold Scots don't rank highly on Humza Yousaf and Patrick Harvey's apocalyptic climate change agenda. Instead, we'll get a doubling down on failure and a reiteration of every self-righteous climate change cliche that ever polluted the political atmosphere. All that remains is to concur with Lomborg that a modest rise in temperature might well be the only way to save people in Scotland from dying from the cold. Graeme Arnott, Stewarton. Indy would make things even worse. I notice from Alistair Galloway's letter, December the 15th, that the blame for the SNP government's poor performance is now being expanded beyond Westminster to include misrepresentation by the Scottish media. This is ironic, given the amount of print afforded to him by the Herald over the years. Had I known what the consequences of voting for devolution back in the day were going to be, I would have voted against. Unfortunately, I didn't, and for that I must take my share of the blame. There is little I like about it, from a voting system that few people understand, to the poor quality of the politicians it has attracted, from a mismanaged and over-budget parliament building to mismanaged and over-budget ferries, from forgetful and secretive first ministers to, at the very least, misleading and secretive health secretaries, from high and probably going higher taxation to poor and getting poorer public services, from overreaching policies actually designed to create conflict with Westminster to unsafe main arterial routes and mismanaged ferries to the islands. And still Mr. Galloway blames outside forces that we need more independence. It will fix everything. In my view, it would only lead to even worse decision-making and more division between us and our neighbour and main trading partner and to third world country status. Angus McEachran, Aberdeen. Our government is committed to NHS. I note your report on last Thursday's First Minister's questions. Deputy FM apologises over scandalous waiting times for an ambulance. The Herald, December the 15th. Shona Robinson's apology was genuine because she recognises that her health service is struggling as we enter winter. Her statement came in response to a question from Douglas Ross. But where are the Scottish Conservatives' proposals for improving the NHS? I am sure his own party's health secretary at Westminster would be interested. Shona Robinson informed the Parliament that only 2 months ago the Scottish Government announced an additional £50 million in funding for the ambulance service and told MSPs that 1,388 workers had been recruited to the service in the last 3 years. Also announced by the Health Secretary 2 months ago was an additional £12 million this year to expand and improve the hospital at home service in an attempt to reduce pressure on A&E and the need for ambulances. Those announcements have barely had time to impact on services, but I'm sure the Scottish Government is committed to keeping our NHS free at the point of need, something I am not convinced is the case in other parts of the UK. Katrina C. Clark, Falkirk. Case for flat rate income tax. So another tax hike for high earners has threatened to fill a hole in the budget for public expenditure. Warning over new tax ban for higher earners. The Herald, December the 15th. When will politicians and public alike wake up to the fact that what we call income tax is actually a wealth tax applied to earnings rather than to wealth? Higher earners who share their good fortune by spending their money for the benefit of the economy are punished by unfair tax rates, while those who hang on to it are able to accumulate wealth from which they enjoy unearned income. At the other end of the earnings scale, employers are able to pay poverty wages to workers who are untaxed, leaving the public services and benefits provided to them to be funded by the tax on higher earners. Surely the direction of travel should be towards a fair income tax, which taxes all income at a flat rate, with no cliff edges at threshold points. This would result in someone earning £100,000 paying 10 times as much as someone on 10k. It would clearly be necessary to move progressively towards this objective, but the end result should be higher wages at the low end of the scale and less need for film star salaries at the top end. The disincentive which higher tax rates bring to those undergoing education and training for highly skilled occupations would be removed. The difficulty of persuading early retirees to return to the workforce to fill vital skill shortages would also be greatly eased. Everyone requires the services provided by public expenditure, and fair tax rules would require every pound of earned income to be taxed at the same rate in a similar fashion to expenditure tax. Willie McLean, Mogai. Shame on BBC for Moan Platform. Was Laura Koonsberg's Baroness Moan interview, December the 17th, which had great similarity to the Prince Andrew interview, acceptable to the public? Is this propping up of one side of ongoing legal processes and disputes the balanced reporting expected from the BBC, whose services we are forced to pay for? The whole situation where people in positions of power were invited to join a VIP lane to provide goods and profit from a dire situation was wrong. A greater display of avarice is hard to bring to mind. The behaviour of Baroness Moan and her husband, who seem to have spent this summer rehearsing their performance, in my opinion, is unacceptable. The BBC should not be allowing these privileged people further privilege by presenting this to the general population. The BBC's position needs to be questioned. Is this to be allowed to become a thing? The rich are to be allowed to use the BBC to present a defence for potential wrongdoing that is under investigation by legal processes in our society? The whole situation is unacceptable and unbelievable. It is time to lose the House of Lords and scrutinise profiteering in our NHS. Morag Campbell, Glasgow. These were a selection of letters to the Herald on Monday, the 18th of December, 2023.
This is from the Herald Scotland of Tuesday, the 19th of December, 2023, from the Voices section. Scotland's political apparatchiks, who are truly unbelievable. This article is by Kevin McKenna. As 2024 approaches, each of Scotland's main political parties are finalising their lists of preferred candidates for next year's UK election. Here we run the rule over some of the rising stars of Scottish politics who are set to test the limits of our understanding. Jamie Thump, he or him, the 18-year-old policy analyst and researcher at SNP party headquarters, won Employee of the Year 2023 for carrying Humza Yousaf's briefcase above and beyond the call of duty. He first came to prominence when he won an essay competition on the theme, Public Health is Good for Everyone. His dad, Farker, owns the well-known sustainable boiler installation firm, Thump's Pumps, which provided £1 million to sponsor Michael Russell's ill-fated Yes Winnebago. Jamie's policy paper on installing CCTV in every home to detect unhealthy food choices and cutting out hate crime is regarded by party insiders as a visionary template for what an independent Scotland will look like. Taking the stage at last year's party conference, he took out his guitar and hummed the Sky Boat song before urging everyone to turn to the person on their left and say something pure Scottish to them. When it resulted in 2 million TikTok hits, Mr. Yousaf approached him about becoming a candidate. Adler D. Fertile III, Mr. Fertile, 28, is expected to become a candidate for the Scottish Tories at the UK general election. He has been a policy analyst for the party after moving very suddenly to Scotland from upstate Manhattan, where his family's law firm have close connections to Hunter Biden's hedge fund operation. Mr. Fertile helped edit the Harvard Policy Forum, a self-funded campus newspaper which advocated for Senator Joe McCarthy's subcommittee on investigations to be reconstituted owing to what he regarded as an upsurge in un-American activities. He claimed this was the result of a deep moral malaise fueled by Frasier repeats and avant-garde Catholicism. He also led a raid on the Harvard Philatelic Society's meeting rooms, suspecting that rare Russian stamps from the Soviet era were being used as code for a Russian spy ring. He is married to Annabel Dennis Setterington of the well-known Borders Wine Company. Spike, Mr. Spike, a long-time Scottish Greens activist, has been groomed for stardom since he was 16, after he caught the eye of party chiefs at the 2015 Midsummer Sabbat atop Calton Hill on Walpurgis night. He came to prominence at the COP26 conference in Glasgow in 2021, where he had pitched a teepee on the banks of the Clyde opposite the conference centre. Controversially, he was arrested on suspicion of intent to supply Class B drugs, which he'd claimed were organic produce grown on his family's orchard in South Devon. However, he escaped with a caution when it was discovered that they held nothing of any substance, legal or illegal. Living off the grid in a cave behind a waterfall in the Campsies, he renounced his family surname, Smythe Fondue, deeming it to be the remnant of an odious and outmoded social construct denying him full spiritual autonomy. Mr. Spike's opportunity to represent the Scottish Greens at Holyrood comes after the party announced that future candidate selection will be determined by means of a conference karaoke competition at which he has excelled in recent years. In 2014, he co-authored a pamphlet with, he claimed, his goat spirit guide called No Roads, No Bother, which argued the case for destroying Scotland's road infrastructure as the first step to getting people out of their cars to save the planet and cut down on petrol bills. Ben Gormley, the 48-year-old Scots academic, was a founding member of Tony Blair's new Labour think tank, Empathy Stupid, and is on the board of directors of the former Labour PM's Middle East Policy Initiative, All Kinds of Everything. His seminal policy work, Being Meaningful and Meaning It, it is said to have inspired Sir Keir Starmer. He is reported to be a close confidant of the UK Labour leader and made the shortlist of candidates being considered to act as godfather to Sir Keir's son, coming third top in the focus group set up for the purpose. He is Professor of Applied Diversity at Heriot Watt and is Visiting Professor of Kindness at Strathclyde University. In the 2014 referendum on independence, he authored an essay for the Daily Telegraph which claimed that independence would lead to World War III. He claimed to have seen secret Chinese strategy documents targeting an independent Scotland as a base for its nuclear submarines when Trident was moved out of the Clyde naval base, and that Beijing spies were already operating in Scotland covertly under the guise of scientists advising Edinburgh Zoo on mating procedures for the giant pandas Sunshine and Sweetie. Jock Mendelsohn, the 52-year-old Scottish Lib Dem hopeful, is a career policy adviser who has worked with the SNP, Scottish Labour, the Scottish Tories and the Scottish Greens. He has stood as a candidate at the last four UK and Scottish elections for each of these parties, believing that they all have much in common and that they just need to talk to each other a bit more. He is currently an associate director of the lobbying firm Going for the Messages Matters, which advises the Scottish Wholesalers Consortium. He is also a visiting professor of empathy and meaning well at Glasgow University's John Smith Centre. In a rousing speech last year to the Scottish Lib Dem conference at the Old Signal Box, Lucas, he advocated a nature's pruning fork approach to assisted dying. He is currently chair of the Scottish-Ukraine Friendship Committee, the Scottish-Russian Rabbi Burns Committee, the Scottish-Israel We Can Work It Out Committee, and the Scottish-Palestine We Need to Grab a Coffee Soon Foundation. Annabella Lopez, Miss Lopez, 26, has been on the front line of the campaign for sustainable rabbit hutches for the last 20 years. She's had a career-long passion for yes, during which she's acted in various roles for some of the SNP's most influential figures. These include a spell as an intern for Humza Yousaf when he was health minister, research for Angus Robertson when he was deputy leader of the SNP, policy analyst for Joe Fitzpatrick when he was at Drugs and Advisor Without Portfolio to Michael Matheson at Health. Her dad, Salvador, owns the well-known Spanish vodka range Salvador Swally and is a long-time local party donor in North Lanarkshire. He moved there from his native Madrid to be with his future wife, Agnes, a native of Airdrie. According to party insiders, his daughter will eventually get some seat, someday, one way or the other. That article was by Kevin McKenna. This is from the Herald Scotland of Tuesday, the 19th of December, 2023, from the business section. Scotland flight fans farewell as Loganair retires Saab 340. A Scottish airline is to retire its fleet of aircraft that has served travellers for more than two decades. Fans of the Loganair Saab 340 fleet, a favourite on social media feeds, snapped up all the tickets for the final farewell flights in January in just a few hours. having completed over 430,000 flights and carried more than 8 million passengers, the Saab 340 holds a special place in Loganair's heritage, Loganair said. To commemorate this extraordinary record of service, we're throwing open the hangar doors to say farewell to the Saab 340, with the opportunity to fly on a specially arranged flight aboard the Saab 340 on their final weekend in service, or tour our Glasgow hangar for a last chance to see the aircraft before it leaves our fleet. It said it is celebrating the legacy of the Saab 340 as we bid a fond farewell to the trusty aircraft that has formed the backbone of Loganair's fleet for over 24 years. Circuit flights are operating from Glasgow Airport, are flying passengers on a 45-minute West Coast tour on 2 days. The airline is offloading the Saab aircraft through a £10 million sale agreement. Loganair said the additional ATR turboprops will bring a reduction of up to 27% in carbon emissions. Glasgow-based Loganair has been replacing 8 Saab 340 aircraft with Franco-Italian manufacturer ATR's turboprops in recent months. Both the flights and hangar tours were sold out on the same day they were put on release. The events attracted attention on social media, with one flyer saying, "I really hope I will be able to be part of this sad day. I love the Saab 340 so much, and it's a dream of mine to fly one. Hopefully I will be able to come." One fan said on X, formerly Twitter, "Love flying on the Saabs from Orkney. Always seen it as if I'm flying on a private jet." Another said, "It's been a bucket list item for a very long time to fly in one of these planes again. Just booked my tickets from Switzerland to Glasgow and one of the farewell flight tickets. Can't wait." The airline operates 42 aircraft on 70 routes. That article was by Brian Donnelly.
That concludes this week's edition of the Herald Scotland podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Hearn Review. Tell your friends about our service.